Welcome, and you're listening to West Indian House 1970. I'm your host, Denise Fraser. This two-hour segment is going to feature four stories. It was originally just going to be one about my father, Alfred Fraser, and his university experience at the University of Alberta. But in my research, I uncovered many people. These people are all fascinated by West Indian House and what it meant to them for its time. And I decided it was meant to be, and I added them. These stories are similar, and the storytellers themselves are similar in a way as well. I would describe these people as older folks happy to share stories of their glory days. This first story comes from my dad, Alfred Fraser, from an island in the Caribbean, St. Vincent and the Grenadines. He is retired in his 80s. I shared with him a video on YouTube of him playing steel pan with his friends in 1970. He recalls what instrument he was playing and that some of the instruments they played were made by hand in White Mud Creek, Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. I'll post the video Klondike Days Parade 1970 to 1972. The audio does not match. Whoever filmed the video must have had bad audio or didn't want to share the ambiance of the street parade. At 7 minutes and 49 seconds, you see the banner West Indian Society and the people walking down the street and waving. The steel pan band is playing their music feverishly as the entire band plays in unison. My dad's story begins when he recounts how he started West Indian House in 1966 or 1967 by paying the University of Alberta $50 rent and asking his tenants to pay $30 each, which would include a meal every day of the week, with each tenant cooking on one day of the week. This is the first segment, and you're listening to West Indian House 1970.
I was involved from the birth of Caribbean Harmonite Steel Orchestra, and I started the West Indian House. And West Indian House was a place where Caribbean students would find easy lodging and be among friends. We lived like brothers. There were always seven in the Caribbean House. They weren't always Caribbean students. We had two guys, Rick Drubinsky, I think was his last name, became a lawyer. He lodged at West Indian House, but he was from Calgary, and so on. We weren't all Caribbean. Actually, usually at Caribbean House, there would be some Africans. There were two Nigerians. And that was during the time when there was the war between the civil war between the Igbo and the rest of Nigeria. And by coincidence, Abbas was, I don't remember who was what, but it was Mike Laleye and Abbas, I think, Olewolo, right? One of them was Igbo, the other one was not, which meant one was Christian, the other one was Muslim. And they lived in Caribbean House, West Indian House, right? Because we needed seven, so they made up the seven. Mind you, sometimes the Africans were there. There's Obed from Lesotho, right? But these two guys stood out because they were always arguing and fighting. While the war was going on in Nigeria, we had the little war going. The thing is, they never struck a blow. They were always arguing and ready to fight. And we had to hold them back, you know, but they never fought. From the same country, but they always arguing and fighting, ready to get. And, of course, Abbas was big and he had marks in his face, as though he was a tribal chief. And Michael was a little fellow, the smallest guy, but he took on the biggest guy to argue and fight with because they had disagreements over the war in Nigeria at the time. I don't know if you guys know that kind of a history. When I first came to Canada, I lived in the Lister Hall for the students as a university student. And then as soon as I found out the West Indian folks, I moved into, well, no, I moved to International House. International House was created by the liberal folks who want to welcome immigrants, and there were very few black people at the university. And so I ended up at International House. But at International House, they were like looking down on the people who were living at International House. There was an international club. An international club created International House. So I showed up there and I spent a year there. And I got sick and tired of what was going on. If somebody was coming in and treating us as though they have to teach us how to clean our house. So I pretty soon got the wind of that the university was buying up the houses. They were going to expand. They had these houses, basically they're not sure what to do with. I got the wind of it, and I got the rent for one of the houses. It was owned by Dr. Collip and his wife, and they were very, very good to us. They became like our Canadian family members. Within the house they used to occupy, but it was owned now by the university. So they kind of adopted us. Every so often we'd have a nice, you know, they'd invite us over and so on. But what I'm saying about West Indian House, it was a place where the students occupied, and we had a deal going where they would pay like $30 a month, and I paid to the university $50 a month, and we all always had to have 7 students living in that house, the West Indian House, and we would take turns to cook. So you, as a student, you just cooked one dinner in the week, and it was your turn the next week. Whatever the day was, that was your turn to cook. But there were always 7 of us, so it ended up where you always had a dinner to eat that night, but you only cooked once a week. That started way in 1966. I came to Canada in 64. I got a scholarship from the government. I went to International House in 65, and by 66 we started West Indian House. What I'm saying is more to it than that. So I'm not saying this because I'm tooting my own horn. This is the historical fact. What we did was we made arrangements and we bought most of the groceries wholesale. We had milk delivered, we had bread delivered, and we would buy wholesale. We figured out the wholesalers and we'd buy the jam and so on. How did we get meat? I don't remember exactly, but you know, whatever we did, we got it wholesale. That's why with the $30 payment for rent and dinner, and then we would buy cornflakes and we'd have milk delivered and bread delivered, and there'd always be jam. So you can make your own breakfast, go to school, yes. and then when you come back in the evening, it would be somebody's turn to make dinner. So that was the setup. You couldn't have a better deal. But here's where I'm going to toot my own horn for a little while. After this, for a short while, after this was successfully going for years, as I said, 66, 67, then the houses were still there. So I went up to the university and I rented a second one. And the second one that I rented, again, I put, again, 7 people in the house, but that was called Nigeria House. I was the landlord. I only got to go there to collect the rent. When they were having their parties, I was not supposed to be around. I could only go there because I was the landlord. West Indian House, starting since 1966, 1972, and I was just watching your video. Did you put up that video with the, is it Klondike and Edmonton? There was a West Indian Society, and again the West Indian Society copied International Club. Canadians, I don't know, whoever decided to volunteer because they want to be friendly to visitors to Canada. Just remember, at the University of Alberta, there, you can count the number of black people on one hand at that time. There wasn't a single person until there was a young lady that showed up about three or four years later who was from Canada. But yeah. I want to say again about West Indian House. So we grew out of Club International. And then I moved from Club International. Club International continued on as Club International. West Indian House was where now the Caribbean folks, after a few more people started to gather, then they created a West Indian society. And West Indian House, that's where just a small group of students, I mean, we were looking for a place to live and we figured that out. But then that's where West Indian society was more or less housed. That's West Indian society now trying to bring together the West Indian folks, whether they're at university or not, and to do something as a community because we were a small group. And in those days, there was a fair amount of discrimination. I don't
Yes.
want to go into that, but I'll give you just a couple of examples. For example, I was at the bus stop one day, and the fellow who owned his business, he came out and told me to move from there. He didn't want me in front of his window. Okay.
Yeah.
I was walking along the street of Edmonton one day, and an old lady on a cane, she can hardly hold up. She started to chase me with her cane.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Denise Fraser, and you are listening to West Indian House, 1970. This story begins with Donna Coombs, Montrose, an artist, a musician who remembers her time on campus in the 70s. The Black Panther movement was driving social change. Donna Coombs Montrose is from the Caribbean. She came to Canada in the early 70s. She too shares her experience and her passion to preserve the history of the city of Edmonton as Historian Laureate. This is the second segment, and you're listening to West Indian House, 1970.
Yes, I'm trying to do mapping of the, well, all of the Black community, because there are three different generations or three different groupings of Black people came to Edmonton or came to Alberta. First from the Deep South, running from U.S. racism, from Jim Crow laws. So there's a community here of people from Oklahoma, Texas, and Southern States. That's our foundation community. And then in the 50s, Caribbean people started to come on different schemes of that the Canadian government was introducing, like the domestic scheme for Caribbean women, who they took teachers and nurses from Jamaica and Grenada and Barbados to come to work on this domestic scheme, as it was called, so that white women could join the workforce while we took care of their kids. And then Trudeau changed the immigration laws somewhat, and so more students started to come from the Caribbean for school. Prior to that, those who came for sciences across Canada, they closed down a lot of the programs for medicine because they didn't want Black doctors. So there was a strong footprint of racism that forced families, a lot of students who were doing science subjects, in order to become medical doctors, they closed down their programs. And recently, there was an at Queen's University, for example, there was an apology to a Trinidadian family called Bartholomew, because their grandfather was impacted by that. He was one of the people, and he was just sent back home immediately without any explanation, on the grounds that white women in Kingston would not want to be treated by a Black doctor. So there was that kind of overriding impact that students were facing, in addition to the normal racism in housing and other areas. I myself came as a student in the late 60s to Toronto and had some of that experience myself. Now in Alberta, this is a project I'm engaging in to go through the University of Alberta yearbooks to look for Black faces.
Right.
You know, so that's, I'm contacting them now to, for not only evidence of what disciplines we studied, but also try to develop a directory of who exactly passed through the West Indian House. We have, there's been a lot of interest in our community here in terms of the, what happened at the West Indian House, what groups we created, music groups and steel drums, steel bands, other groups we created.
The theater and things like that, right?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's, it's still in the earlier stages. Okay. We've been using the West Indian House theme to create some production late last summer, devoted to waking up that history. But so I've been interviewed a couple of people who were active in those periods. Milton Zyfordine is the name of one of them. He's from Trinidad, but he would bring music bands to Edmonton performance, and he himself would sponsor music bands. So I can ask him about membership in those groups more, because people are getting more interest in exactly who, you know, ran the first steel band. In fact, I had a an inquiry a couple of days ago about, okay, so-and-so is claiming that they have the first steel band. But then, no, this is not true, because look, here is a poster that came out of campus, and it says that so-and-so steel band existed back in 65, and they were based at West Indian House. I'm trying to piece records together, so I am very willing to share with you.
Oh, thank you.
Whatever I can, whatever interest or clarity I can generate.
Would you be interested in a three-way conversation with my father as well? Because he has some memories of...
Oh, that would be excellent.
Oh, good, good, good. Okay, so I can arrange that as well. Because he listed off some names. I'm not sure if you recognize any of them, but he told me Tony Archer, who's passed away, would play the bass. I'm not sure what years this... He didn't give me definitions of dates and things. And then Mike Lancaster, Roland J. Joseph, and Arthur Chin, and then Andrew Patrick Edwards, Andy.
Yeah, and he's still here.
Oh, good. Oh, good. And does he write? He writes, he's writing.
He wrote two novels. But I tapped him on his wrist because he spelled my name wrong.
Okay.
But he's in his 80s now, yes. Still very conscious.
Oh,
yes.
good. Yes, my father will be celebrating his 83rd birthday, April 6th. He's very conscious, and he wants to tell more than listen when you want to have a conversation.
That's excellent.
With him. Okay.
You know, it would be important to record.
Yes.
That this can join the bank of, because I write for the city as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I write stories. I came to Edmonton with my family in late 1998. Because when I finished graduate school, I went back to Trinidad for 18 years. Oh. So I missed a whole chapter, because from Toronto... Coming to Toronto, I went to University of Guelph, and then I went to the United States. I joined the Black Power movement.
Oh, wow. Yeah, your story, too. I want to hear more. That's amazing. Yes.
And so so people I met through the Black Power movement took me to Detroit so that I could be more familiar with the Black Panthers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. So you're part of history, yes.
Yeah. Well, I was busy.
Yes. Wow.
You know, so that's how come I met Rosa Parks. We were in the same group.
Wow.
In Detroit, and so I was busy myself. So later on, when I went back to Trinidad to work for the labor movement, you know.
Oh yeah. Wow.
Work for George Weeks, because in Trinidad there was a different ostrich. Are you from Trinidad?
No, no. So my father's from St. Vincent and the Grenadines. My story is that my parents met in Canada. So I was born in Ottawa.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've actually never been to the Caribbean, but my mother's from Jamaica.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is like a, I'm reclaiming my roots and retracing the steps.
You know, our history is so dynamic and so interesting. My grandfather is from St. Vincent.
Oh.
Came as a young man to Trinidad.
Okay.
So I have family in St. Vincent. Well, I bear the same last name. I know, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
So my brother would go back to St. Vincent often, and he married a woman whose mother came from St. Vincent as well.
Oh.
So we have, and then I have another, he married a woman from Barbados, my grandfather.
Wow.
And then my other two grandparents were from Grenada. So
wow, so you have touches in all of the islands almost. Wow,
yeah. You understand?
Wow, yes.
I claim all of them.
Yep, you know? Amazing.
But you'll be surprised that so the student population in Edmonton,
yes,
reflected the nature of the Caribbean because we came from different islands.
Right.
So there's from Jamaica, there's from St. Vincent or from Barbados or from Trinidad. Or other islands, Antigua, and they all played music together or ate together, you know. In one of the interviews, they were describing at West Indian House how they all shared a chicken, or how many of them were living at West Indian House, and some would just get this big gravy.
Wow.
And the rice.
Uh-oh. You know? Yep.
Yeah. I guess there was a chicken hierarchy.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yep. Yep.
Anyway,
okay,
there were other stories related to West Indian House that I find so amusing because some of the guys, you know, they had a fiance back home and they promised to bring her up when they finish school or things settle or, you know, they get their permanent residence. And then they pick up with a white woman here, and so she would be frequenting West Indian House. And and sometimes the fiance would come on her own and surprise them. And we even had a stage production called West Indian Diary, which was built around the West Indian House as well, which we staged at the library here for a week and brought out a professional acting cast from Toronto to play the students here at the time. And there's a scene where there was a place they used in Edmonton for parties called Hazeldean.
Oh,
and so at Hazeldean, this guy from one of the students from West Indian House, he was flirting with a white woman.
Oh.
And he was having sex with her in the toilet. His girlfriend went in the toilet and put a cocktail on both of them. Oh. So we played this gently.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, we didn't disclose that she was entering the toilet and he was already occupied.
Mm-hmm.
And then she came out with her head held high and just walked out of the dance. Yeah, Hazeldean is still here.
Oh, good. Wow.
It's no longer used by the West Indian community, but Andy... Edwards would have a lot of records because they used to hold dances there, fundraising dances. That's why this was the base sort of for the West Indian community at the time.
Selwyn Jacobs gave me a little bit of information about, he said he put on plays as well. He went to the United States as well around 1972 to 74. So he went down to study in California.
I see. Yeah, I know Selwyn did.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and he said that the West Indian House was like a more like a community center for black folks. So everyone was welcome. African folks and the Caribbean community as well came together.
Yes. And in fact, and they hosted a lot of, they had a West Indian week on campus.
Wow.
And so Selwyn used to teach limbo dancing from the this student newspaper of the time, the University of Alberta student newspaper called The Gateway.
Oh, The Gateway, okay.
I have seen, you know, stories of people trying to do limbo and, you know, play steel pan and, you know, whatever little stories that Gateway would carry of West Indian Week.
Okay.
Because it was a small black community, so they didn't feel obliged to really portray. And then you know, we didn't even have an EDI, equity, diversity and inclusion kind of structure at the university. So it was just a few black students trying to make an impact, right. You know, on the culture here and the, trying to carry their heritage forward.
And I also found a video on YouTube. It was labeled 1970 to 1972 Calgary, Edmonton, Klondike. Klondike did. Well, it just said Klondike, but they didn't, in the video, the music, whoever recorded the video did not include the music that was happening at the time. I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not sure why. But so the West Indian House comes down the line at about 7 minutes and 49 seconds. So here, I'll just send this. So you just have to fast forward. The rest of the thing is all white people. I was most interested. I'm not sure what piqued my interest. I was looking for music.
Thank you.
Yes, no worries. I was looking for music and maybe even to find something of my father, because he gave me references of they played in Klondike days. He said they went to, where else did he tell me? They had gone to Pincher Creek, Medicine Hat. So I was just looking for anything that I could find. I know video wouldn't have been the greatest to try and find in those times, but I just decided to search up Klondike Days. He also mentioned the Calgary Stampede. So performing for the Calgary Stampede. I didn't have years to reference as well. So, yeah, I was just trying to find anything. Like, I don't know. I also, during my research, I've been trying to look at, who performed at, the Calgary Stampede. And I came to learn that the stadium changed over the years. So
yes, they built new structures.
Yes. And then when he mentioned Klondike Days as well, I wasn't sure if the performance happened inside or, but I found this video, so that was really exciting. And then when I saw my dad in the video, I was like, wow, I kept like he's so young. This was before I was born, you know. And it's just like maybe 30 seconds of him passing by and this West Indian House is playing. And yeah, I'm not sure if you've gotten to the video yet or.
You know who may also have some, Calgary Stampede records, the Glenbow Archive, because they have a lot of the provincial records. So you mentioned Pincher Creek and...
Yes. A Medicine Hat, he mentioned. I think they even went
some
to Red Deer.
Some communities have their own archives. I don't know how far back.
Right.
You know, in terms of capturing... Like, I'm trying to work with the Fort Edmonton Archives, which is just one of the bedroom communities outside of Edmonton. On this project, on black people in general.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
you know, there is evidence that we were here, since the 1800s or even before. You know, we had fruit trappers and
wow.
So I'm doing trying to find records.
This is amazing work.
So I'm trying to do a lot of research around what we know. Build on what we know and what we don't know. Try to find out more of what we don't know. Like we have the Canadian $10 bill as Viola Desmond.
Right.
In 1922, a woman here named Lulu Anderson was kicked out of a theater on our main street, Jasper Avenue. And she had a ticket in hand the same way, and she was abused on the street.
Oh, no.
And this is 1922, a good at least 30 years before the Viola Desmond, So we have a lot of records like that, individual experiences, all of our communities had sleeping car porters. Some of them had come from the Caribbean as well. And I don't know if you're aware in your city of the existence of sleeping car porters when the trains used to pull in to the station in the 50s or 40s. They contained also porters who were from the Caribbean,
oh.
you know, because movement across the colonies, movement was more possible. So a lot of Caribbean men or even women who found themselves in the United, what is now the United States, made their way on, you know, they found employment as porters, which mm-hmm. was the only job black men could get after slavery. So the trains would crisscross Canada, you know. So a lot of students worked for summer on the trains, you know, those yeah. who were going to school or if they were going to school at all. Mm-hmm. Well, in the 60s at least, some of them found employment on the trains, you know, crossing, mm-hmm. crisscrossing Canada from Montreal to Vancouver, you know.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah, that's how they paid their school fees.
Oh, they, oh yes. They have to find a side job, yeah. Oh.
You know, well. So they would live at West Indian House and give up their accommodation over the summer because they would live on the trains kind of thing. So I'm historian laureate, so I'm wow. kind of... for the city, just for the city.
Oh, the city. Okay,
it's an honorary position.
Well,
you know.
Well, Canada will but recognize. yeah, soon. Canada will recognize yeah. soon. Yes. Wow.
Yeah. Well, no. Well, this is just for the city of Edmonton for the time being.
Okay.
Because we don't have a national position like this.
Oh.
I'm just supposed to be serving the community.
Mm.
Well. My community of choice, of course, is my community.
Exactly.
But as I'm saying, it's an honorary position. But a lot of different, because I speak about history on behalf of the whole city,
uh-huh.
at least the position is supposed to. Man, white people are asking me, so what are you doing for me, for oh. my tax dollars?
Wow.
What, I said, well, first of all, it's an honorary position.
Right.
I'm not being paid to use the toilet. Or to function or anything else, because it's an honorary position.
Right.
You know, so I have to kind of back them off.
Oh.
The choice is mine what I want to do with the position. I'm sorry. You can't direct me from City Hall.
After hearing about the Gateway newspaper at the University of Alberta, I learned about Hazeldine, the event space where many West Indian House events were held. I also traced archives at Glenbow Museum in Calgary. Donna Coombs Montrose, the City of Edmonton's historian laureate, helped me piece together the timeline. I contacted Selwyn Jacob, a filmmaker known for exploring the experiences of Black Canadians and other narratives from Canada's multicultural communities. He has worked as both an independent director and producer with the National Film Board of Canada since 1997. Selwyn also knew my father from the early days of West Indian House. This is the third segment, and you're listening to West Indian House 1970. I'm Denise Fraser. West Indian House, that was, what years were you in?
I think I lived there between 68 and 72.
Okay.
So I think that picture would have been taken in 1970.
Oh.
I'm trying to figure out the steel band. There was a band that existed when I got up there, and we started playing together maybe in 69.
Oh.
So it could be late 69, but I am guessing it's probably 70.
70, okay.
We could put 69, 70.
Oh, and then I just found a YouTube video of Klondike Days. It was, I don't know, there's no music. I can't hear the music. The person who did the video, what they did was they put just... some kind of I can share it with you. I'll send it to you.
Okay, where did you get that video?
It's in on YouTube.
On YouTube.
Yes.
On YouTube.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and then so I can see like at the very end of the video, West Indian House is coming down the street, playing.
Right.
And there's folks wearing kind of like, what I see, it looks like costumes like, you know, Queen of Diamonds, Queen of Spades.
Does it look like
sort of black and gold.
Yes, and black, and there's also some red and thing. I don't know if that's supposed to mean like Trinidad or something.
No,
like that.
What it is, the theme for the Klondike Parade was always about the gold rush.
Oh, okay.
So we are sort of riffing on that concept of a, you know, like a Caribbean gold rush. So the gold, I think there's some gold and black in the costume, from what I recall.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, so that was the intent, because, you know, the usual criticism is, what does Caribbean people have to do with the gold rush? You know, everybody, I think all of the parade was sort of a tribute to the people who went on the gold rush. That's the whole thing about Klondike Days.
Right, right, right. So, and I heard they also had to change the name of Klondike Days to K-Days or something like that?
Yes, yes. Okay. That was happening much, much, much later.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. I trying to find maybe... do you know if I could find anything about in the newspaper? Would it be about Klondike Days?
You know, back in those days, I'm not too sure. Okay. You know, one of the things I might suggest is that if the student union, I'm just trying to figure out, there's a guy named Irvin Frederick. He was from Trinidad, and he was part of the student union. They had a photography unit where he could use the equipment. So he went out to a lot of the Caribbean functions, and that's how I think those pictures of this steel band playing at usually played on campus during the month of February. We'd celebrate Black History Month.
Oh, yes.
So I think... that picture, we might have put on a Caribbean Days where we put on a play, the steel band was playing. Those are some gigs that we got, and sometimes we'd play up at the faculty club.
Oh, the faculty club.
There was a room called Room at the Top, RAT. Oh. I don't know if it still exists now. But anyways, that's kind of my memories of where we would have played. So at the student union building, I think there's a theater. And we would put on a sort of Caribbean show. Oh. I have some pictures of some, you know, so a little dance troupe that we had and a little scene from a play that we put on. But I think all of those might have been taken by the same guy, Irvin Frederick, because nobody would have had interest in sort of Caribbean Days activities, you know, generally speaking.
Right, right, right. Oh, okay. And it's,
so I didn't send, I could send you, you know, there's a, five women, they're dressed up doing a typical Caribbean dance. I think most of them are probably deceased by now. I have a scene of them dancing from the same time, from the same era of that steel band shot, and a play we put on called Zingy was a kind of a Caribbean theme play dealing with Obia. You know,
oh,
so
yes.
It's kind of folk theater type of thing. So those are the activities that we did, you know, and it was, the central place was the West Indian House.
Right, right. Yeah,
where
that's
most people lived.
That's, yeah, that's the stories I got from my dad. That he managed some of the, I guess, the housing. That's what he, that's what he was telling me. I guess helping people get their, and paying for the rent as well as what his, his role was.
The other thing that I left between 72 and 74, and I went to California to go to school. So I think while I was gone, the steel band became a little more prolific, and they had gotten a grant from Alberta Culture, and they drove all, you know, around the province, you know, putting on concerts and so on. I don't know who has pictures of that. I know I saw one somewhere, but it's not that great. But I know there's a summer they got you know, kind of summer activities also, go around and play in different communities.
Yes. Yeah, this is what sparked my wanting to get to talk to you, because my dad told me about this grant. I think he said he wrote the grant.
It's possible. Possible. I wasn't there, as I said, but I had another brother.
Oh.
And the band was completely different. There's a guy named Arthur Chin. I don't know if he gave you that name. He never left Edmonton, and he's in that picture.
Oh.
I think he's about the second from the left when you look at the picture.
Arthur Chin.
Yeah.
Yes. This name is coming to.
Yeah. And he's from Guyana.
Guyana.
There's another guy there from Barbados. Your dad was from St. Vincent. I was from Trinidad.
Oh, yeah.
And there's another guy named Roland Joseph. I think he might have passed on.
Oh.
He's in the center of the band there. So he was from Trinidad. So it's kind of a mix. But it kept changing as people move in and out.
Right.
And then another guy named Bertie Fraser came and joined the band, and he used to arrange for us. And he was pretty knowledgeable about music, but he wasn't, you know, he'd play with the band now and then, but he was more or less the arranger for the band.
Well, you have one picture from the
place? Yeah, I have a couple of pictures. It's just there's a guy who is the Obia man, and a young guy, you know, he got an injury, and they sent him to the Obia man. So that I can't remember what the play was all about, but the picture I have is, you know, those two characters. I don't know if, you know, if somebody doesn't know the play, if it will, you know, travel. We used to put on a show called Caribbean Perspective. It was a community television show around 1978, thereabout.
Okay.
And I had the video recordings of all of those shows. They're available at Roper Road. Anyways, if you go under my name, I have a lot of archival stuff there that are not necessarily related. It's more related to films that I made much later on.
Oh, okay.
But I think when they were getting rid of those videotapes that they had from the Caribbean community, they donated it, or they left them there.
Oh.
So you can go there, and you should be able to look for other stuff that might be related to the Caribbean experience.
Oh, good. Yes, yeah, so Caribbean Prospective?
Perspective, P-E-R-S.
And it's in the Provincial Archives?
Yeah, Provincial Archives of Alberta. There's an Edmonton Archives. There's the City Archives of Edmonton, which is different from the Provincial Archives of Alberta. I know also somebody I'll find her name. Actually, her name is Donna Coombs Montrose. I'll send you a thing. She is the, I think she has a title, like she is the Poet Laureate for Edmonton.
Oh.
And she's trying to document the history of a lot of people who came to Edmonton and worked at Fort McMurray and so on.
Yep.
You might want to have a chat with her to see what she has, because she is kind of making sure that people who came to Edmonton and didn't necessarily go to university, but also were part of the pioneering people in Edmonton at that time. So maybe she might have information or leads. And there's another guy who had another steel band by the name of Cecil George, but he came much later. Because I know later Donna Coombs was trying to do the same thing. She was doing something on the history of the West Indian House, because the West Indian House was almost like a community center in the early days when, you know, there were very few people from the Caribbean living in Edmonton.
Oh, yeah.
So people would come by, and I think that's why it became this sort of central focus for the community back in the late 60s and 70s, I would say.
Welcome back to West Indian House 1970. I am your host, Denise Fraser. The faculty club at the University of Alberta, specifically in the room at the top, is where the Steel Pan Band would perform Selwyn Jacobs' organized theater productions, including a notable one called Zingy, which took place during Caribbean Days and Black History Month in the early days of West Indian House. In 1978, a television show called Caribbean Perspective aired and is now available in the provincial archives. West Indian House served as a central hub for students during that time. I reached out to Andrew Patrick Edwards, an author who was born in Trinidad, West Indies, and migrated to Canada in 1962. He has lived in Edmonton for the past 50 years. Andrew retired from the Alberta provincial government in 1997 and from his house building construction company, Hummingbird Homes Inc., in 2007. He also knew my father from the early days of West Indian House. This is the fourth segment, and you're listening to West Indian House 1970.
After West Indian House, in 1978, well, in 1970, Mike Lancaster and a group of us got together and we formed the ECCA, Edmonton Caribbean Cultural Association. And we went, we still exist in that now, as a matter of fact. We went dormant in 1992, and then we revived again in 2017. You're hoping to get younger people, but there are younger people more involved now with CARES because of the carnival and all that. So we are filling up again, and we're trying to give the money now that we have to the Edmonton Community Foundation. But we did a lot of stuff because at that time, then there were no really association that dealt with political things or things like dealing with the High Commissioners for the various islands and helping students communicate with the High Commissioners from the islands in case we want passports, stuff like that. And we dealt with the police department, we dealt with the public education department, stuff like that, because they were trying to gear students out of university and into more apprentice other things. So we had meetings about that and so. And we were involved in Klondike Days, Heritage Days, stuff like that. But Alfred like I said, he left and went to Toronto when we had the steel ban. But that's another thing. We participated in the bands now. We had different music bands because we had playboys, tropical playboys. That was Milton Zavdin. I know he worked in Saudi Arabia for quite a while. He used to go back and forth there. Okay. But he had many kids, you know. He has a lot of nice daughters and a lot of big family. Okay, after the Caribbean, the West Indian Society, then in 1978, we formed the ECCA. And like what I told you before, what we did different. We sort of represented all the islands because there was any Caribbean association as yet. No island had any as yet until Jamaica started. Yeah, so but you see, I have all of that in that other book. I wish I used to listen to my aunt and my dad when I was young, because that's what's happening along with my grand, because they don't want to listen. They don't want to know anything about the past, and so that's why I'm writing. I'm writing my memoirs now, and I have about a book right now with 128 pages that I want to print soon. I started it since 1998. Yeah, well, if you want to find out more about between 78 and now, well, not now, but 78 and 92, you could check on my book is in the archives as well. So what I want to do, I want to revise my that Footprints of the Caribbean, because I'm missing all the new parts from 92 to now.
Welcome back to West Indian House 1970. I am your host, Denise Fraser. We will conclude the documentary with a conversation between Donna Combs Montrose and my father. I introduced them during a phone call. Before this, Donna had only spoken with Selwyn Jacobs about West Indian House, about her published work on the ECAMP site, Edmonton City as Museum Project, which is featured in the West Indian Hub at the Timms Center for the Performing Arts in Edmonton. During the conversation, she shared her experiences with the Black Power movement, including an action that took place in Montreal at the time. I found it fascinating to learn about how steel pans were made in White Mud Creek, Edmonton, Alberta, and how new steel pan instruments were acquired for the band back then. This is the final segment, and you're listening to West Indian House 1970.
But back to West Indian House. As I said, I graduated in 1968. So between 66 and 68, guys like Carlisle Ross, he's here right next to me. You know, he's in Edmonton. And Greg Sills in Calgary. Those are steel band guys. I'm talking with the guys in the West. Well, okay, so we were the home of the steel band, how the steel band got started. And yes, Andy Edwards was important in that he got a little combo going. He was playing the mouth organ, I was playing guitar, and a fellow, Glenn Prasad. The little combo, that was the combo we had going. Steel band was Roland Joseph. And how that started out, Roland Joseph just had a one pan and he would play the tune. And then I got interested, sort of, and the reason I mentioned grammar school, at the time, if you were in the grammar school, you had nothing to do with steel band. That was just for wayward guys. I knew nothing about steel band, landed over at West Indian House. Roland Joseph would entertain and entertain the folks, even the university folks would play in the steel band because it was very unusual at the time. And then he kind of roped me in, and he had a two-note pan with only two notes, call it do-do-do. So yeah. I would go around, and the roller would be playing, and he would be like the star of the show, and I am the helper with this do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. All of a sudden, a young fellow by the name of Noel Alaha showed up, was a good steel band man to play the guitar pan or something. But then Noel, because he had experience with steel band, he actually made a couple of steel guitar pans and so on. And again, a little story about that. And I'm with him, okay? I had the transportation. So Noel and I went down by the river, White Mud Creek, right? It's a big river in Edmonton. And because we had to hammer the drums to make them into steel drums, to make music out of them. So while we were hammering the drums, some people heard it and they called the police on us, okay? So that was fine. They saw we were not terrorists. We just make drums, okay? So again, forward. So after a while now, Noel Alaha played between buying a couple of the instruments and so on, we had a little band going. Now I got promoted. I was playing like the guitar pan, for example. Noel Alaha was playing the double second, Roland was playing the first pan. Okay, he was the most experienced, the most musically minded. Again, we fast forward. After a little while, we progressed from there. Where Roland and I came to Vancouver from Edmonton, and we bought a set of drums from the guy who really make drums in Trinidad. Boots, this was his name. He passed about 5-7 years ago or something. Boots,
yeah.
Right? And so we bought a set of drums and we brought it back to Edmonton, and that was the Caribbean Harmonite Steel Orchestra. I was playing the high bass now. But the bottom line is my contribution was I was like the business guy for this Caribbean Harmonites. And we did some fantastic things. I saw this video, and that was me playing the high bass there, but I don't know. And the guy you see right in front of the picture with playing six drums is Greg, whatever his name from, he's now a builder in Calgary. You know, he went to the Southern Institute of Technology in Calgary and did, you know, and he builds houses and stuff like that, does very well. Caribbean Harmonized Steel Band happened, and, you know, it became quite successful. We would, when the faculty club is having their fetes, we'd go and play there for the faculty club. I mean, they felt as though they're in the Caribbean. They have real steel band music and so on. And yeah. So, and we got Bertie Fraser, my cousin, right? No, he showed up at West Indian House one morning. I came down, he and I alone were in the room, in the kitchen. I didn't know the guy, and we're chatting. Oh, how did you? Oh, he knew Selwyn Jacob from Trinidad, from Mousica mm-hmm. Training College, right? But he shows up now, and we start a chat early in the morning. And then after three or four exchanges, this was my cousin. His father and my father were brothers from St. Vincent. They were kind of that Gourmet in St. Vincent, just across from the Methodist Church, right? But now his brother, Hubert Fraser, he's passed on quite a while. My father's Charles Fraser. My father passed when I was 2 or 3 years of age. And his, Bertie's father, Bertie also has passed on, right? Bertie's father, Hubert, is now lived in Trinidad, and he grew his family in Trinidad. Okay, so Bertie now and I show up, and we are cousins sitting in this West Indian house. Bertie actually was a musician, okay? He shepherded the Caribbean Harmonites, so it was a first class, you know, we could do fantastic things, okay? Then I graduated in 1968, so I had to go back to St. Vincent to teach. And I didn't last long. I was supposed to be able to spend the rest of my life teaching French at the St. Vincent Grammar School. But for whatever reason, when I got there and I see the cadets had no instruments, so I thought, well, I was with this Caribbean Harmonites, and I came up with the idea, let's start a steel band for the St. Vincent Grammar School. Now, this was supposed to be way out, okay? Because as I said a few years earlier, if you're in the steel band, that means you're not good for nothing. You're just a vagabond and that sort of stuff. Maybe you might be stealing or whatever. So we started this steel band at the St. Vincent Grammar School. It was the boys doing. They got excited about it. They would have calypso competitions and so on, but no money. So they had no instruments. And so we did what we had to do. And we got enough money to get a steel, you know, a section for a steel band. So we started the Grammar School Steel Orchestra, whatever the heck it was called. And you know what? When they always have a music festival. So when they had the music festival, the steel band from Grammar School was just formed. And we came second, right? So I said to the guys, it was a good thing we didn't come first, because if you came first, you'd have to be up and down playing all the time for the carnival in St. Vincent. We only knew two tunes. So it was a good thing we came second, but we had just started to practice, okay? So that's just an aside. But again, as an aside again, last time Jonathan and I went to St. Vincent, I got to understand that every secondary school in St. Vincent, worth its salt, has a steel band, right? And when I went to visit my cousin's funeral, he was the attorney general, and Pierre Campbell, who was the deputy prime minister for quite some time, now in charge of the lawyers, and they invited me to come there where the lawyers are meeting, and the prime minister was there talking about his attorney general, my cousin, and I was sitting in a preferred, it was a meeting strictly for the lawyers, but Pierre invited me to come. And I sat there, and the prime minister, when he's talking, I was the only one sitting in the family section. So the prime minister basically talking about my cousin who had passed. The prime minister was talking about talking to me, Alfred Fraser. Doreen didn't show up that day. And and then when it was Pierre's turn, he's like the dean of the lawyers. When it was Pierre's turn, he introduced me as, I'm famous as the guy who started the steel band in grammar school, right? And I was kind of concerned, you know, why is this my claim to fame? Okay, and at the end of the session when everybody's gone, now Pierre gathered three or four of the other lawyers. And in that four, five or six lawyers, two of them had played in the grammar school steel band. I didn't know them because, you know, I had left by then. I, you know, it just started. So all of a sudden I realized, well, this was something really big. But again, back to Edmonton, 1968, I left and came back in 1970. In that video we have of the Klondike, I was just watching it, that's why I'm talking about it. In that video, you have the Caribbean Harmonite Steel Band playing in 1972. And the people who were playing in that band in 1972, those were like the next generation. Because the regular steel band, when I left in 68, the regular guys who played in the steel band, they continued, all right? And then in 1972, we got a fund. We got funding from the government of Canada. They had a thing called, the Trudeau's dad had a thing called Opportunities for Youth. So again, I keep saying I was a guy doing basically doing the business of the business part. So I wrote up a proposal, and we thought we wouldn't get funding, but we did. The regular guys who played, like even Selwyn Jacobs, were, you know, very good second pan player. Bertie Fraser, my cousin, he was the musician now that would coach all of us and arrange the tunes and stuff. So Ralph Henry, his wife became a member of parliament. Dr. Ralph Henry now played in the steel band, right? Curtis McIntosh also ended with a PhD, played in the steel band, right? Yeah. But all of those guys had to go back, had graduated by 1972. And so they had graduated now and were leaving. And we had this money, $11,000, for the opportunities for youth. So we recruited a brand new set of guys. We're fortunate that the new guys were trained by the old guard. But what you see in the picture in that Klondike Days parade, that was the new guard. So that's why Greg Seals learned from Tony Archer from Barbados. He was not a student, but he played the six-pan bass. And then Greg Seals from, you know, I spoke about him. He played the low bass that year, even though Tony Archer was still around, right? We went on this tour. When I said steel drums from Alberta, we played at the Stampede. I thought we would have seen a picture of us playing at the Stampede, but no, I think that one was Edmonton Klondike where we played.
We found our way there to beat the drums, to make them into steel drums. So the Trinidadian will understand that. So here's a guy from Trinidad, but you know, I don't think he'd ever made drums before, but he was pretty successful. But the guy, Noel Alaha. He's an East Indian guy. As I said, there was an East Indian house, but we had the steel band in West Indian house. I mean, Roland Joseph was the guy who had a first band, and gradually that morphed into the Caribbean Harmonite Steel Orchestra, because Noel Alahar improved it by making a guitar pan for me to play and a double second that he played. So, and then Roland would play the first band, right? So we had something that made it sound more like a steel band, until one day Roland and I drove from Edmonton to Vancouver, and we met up with Boots. Boots was a fellow who made steel drums in Trinidad and was one of the top steel drum maker, you know, well known in Trinidad. And of course, they had steel drums going in Vancouver at the time. But Edmonton, we just had Noel Alaha's, you know, product, which was second class, to be honest, right? But when Roland and I drove from Edmonton to Vancouver, we brought back a full set, including a high bass, and we didn't have a low bass for quite some time until we invited Boots to come up to Edmonton. And when he came up to Edmonton, then he made the low bass of six drums. But I brought back the high bass, which was four drums, and I played the high bass, you know, and so on for quite some time until Boots came up. I was one of his good customers. He passed about 2 years ago or something. Boots.
What was his real name?
I'll have to think. If are you based in Vancouver?
No, you're based. I live in Edmonton.
You live. Oh, okay. I'll have to think again.
Where are you based?
I'm in Vancouver.
Okay.
Yeah, but
the set you brought back was for Caribbean Harmonites.
Yeah, that's now Caribbean Harmonites had the proper set of instruments that when we play, we are playing okay. But oh yeah, I drifted from the story. What I, no, so Caribbean Harmonites was a going concern, and then that Klondike we had, you know, I just came back from St. Vincent, and we had they had a gig with the Klondike. Every Klondike, there was a restaurant that would hire the steel band because it was celebration time. There was nothing like these modern times where you have Caribbean days and, you know, and the whole street like Toronto, Caribana, nothing like that in those days. The closest that we came was the Klondike, which was the white people's story from the gold diggers times and marching and stuff like that. And with, you know, the Klondike ladies doing a kick up dance and so on. The Klondike days every year. It's like the Stampede. You would have heard of the Calgary Stampede.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's like a mini Calgary Stampede, but the Calgary Stampede is where they focused on the horses and riding the horses and the chuck wagon races and stuff like that. But Edmonton is the Klondike days, which celebrated their search for gold. But for those about a week or so, 10 days, from one weekend to a second weekend and all throughout, they would have every bar would be celebrating Klondike Days special. And so we had this gig, and I was already down in Laval, but I thought, oh, those guys can help, you know, they can be fine, except that there was a tragedy. The Noel Alaha guy, I didn't know him, you know, I was the kind of the guy would work with him, you know. He's you know, as I said, I was with him when he made the drums, but then everything was fine. We're playing nice music and everything, but you know, he would drink extra, and quite often I would be the guy to make sure that he got home. For whatever reason, now I'm gone to, you know, down to on this trip, and then land at St. Vincent, and then back at Laval University in Montreal, and then I got the call that Noel was no longer with us. They had to have they had this contract. What are they going to do, right? And so they persuaded me, right? Because I had just gotten my scholarship money returned, and so I took off from this time. I took a plane from Laval to Edmonton and back. I almost lost my credits for those for the French course because, you know, I missed like a good 10 days. I agreed to go and play for them, and of course they paid my airfare to travel back and forth because they had this gig doing. So, but that's a heck of a lot for the steel band. But you know, it's a good thing that Donna, you mentioned the Black Power, because the Black Power thing, that was my involvement in St. Vincent. Look at it carefully. In 1972, I was looking at it carefully because we toured. We played at the Japanese Gardens in Lethbridge. We played at the Calgary Stampede. We played in Pincher Creek, Alberta. That was they liked our music, and they would have us show up all the time. So when we had this grant, in other words, we had like 10 or 11 students. Everybody got $1,000. I got $1,000 like everybody else, but I said I'll provide the transportation. So I got a second $1,000 to provide the transportation, but that's another story. To take the band up and down, mm-hmm. Steel Drums for Alberta, from Medicine Hat, Pincher Creek, Lethbridge, and so on. We played at a music school between Edmonton and, you know, the students were really excited and our sound was perfect because we were playing in a place friendly for music. But that was a major event for the steel band, okay? But that was the steel band, okay? Because if you look at the music picture in the Caribbean music picture in Edmonton, now you had a serious guitar side came up, and that was with Greg Banfield playing the drums. They have in fets in Edmonton now between 1970 and, well, I left Edmonton in 1974. So now Edmonton had a presence at the Klondike, and they would try to do something near the Klondike. And then now that you have people, my brother Victor continued on. But then again, Andy was talking, gave better information.
It used to be Los Tropicales, and then we changed it to the Gay Tropicales. And after a different meaning went to gay, we've quickly changed to Caribbean Ambassadors. And that's when Greg Banfield came in, Vidya Vosain, and a few others.
As a bass man.
And the guy who played bass, Frank John.
Yeah.
And
there was a guy who had a new strum right on his guitar.
Roddy McKenna.
Yeah. Andy can tell us about what happened now for Caribbean Days. Did they have Caribbean Days in Edmonton in the 1970s?
Well, we participated in the Klondike Days and the Heritage Days.
Heritage Days is new to me. I didn't even experience a Heritage Day, but it was huge now with guys Mike Lancaster and Andy, right? Because I wasn't there after 75. I wasn't there. He was on doing his own thing. He didn't stay much in West Indian House, even though I was, I was the one that started it. After a while, different people would be in charge, like Azamul Karim from Trinidad, Akalai Ross from Guyana. Those guys kind of, I left and went back to St. Vincent. But the thing carried on. In 1974, I left to go work in Ottawa, right? But West Indian House carried on. And by that time now, you have other people now coming into Edmonton, and they didn't need their West Indian House anymore. Victor, for example, he's got his own, he got married, he's got kids. And actually, I want to recommend that you talk to Darren, Victor's daughter's husband, Rose Jordan.
Jordan?
I know Jordan.
Darren Jordan?
Oh. Yeah. Darren Jordan.
He's Bajan.
Oh.
No, yeah.
Bajan.
Bajan and Jamaican. The wife. Oh, you know him well. Good.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Wife is from, his mother is from Jamaica. His dad is from Barbados. Yeah.
Yeah. He runs Five Artists, One Love. It's online. You can see what he's done over the years in terms of promoting art and culture. Mm. Yeah.
So he would be he's more modern than Andy Edwards. Andy Edwards goes between me, and then next is Andy Edwards. He would have been carrying on the story, and then followed up by Darren Jordan. Even though,
but Andy Edwards didn't live at West Indian House.
No, Andy Edwards did not live at West Indian. Neither did Jordan. But that's what I'm saying. But so if you're following the basically it's the Caribbean culture, the gradual introduction of Caribbean culture in Edmonton, and I have to make the point: the local people, the local blacks, were not present at the university for the first few years, right? So they were completely separated off. We made an effort and we found out one or two of them, but they still kind of kept themselves separated off.
There was Elsa Robinson's father. He taught, in fact, he's from Jamaica. He was a professor in the early 60s or late 50s, as a matter of fact. Mm. He came as an instructor. He came as an academic. He got his PhD down east. And he lived off camp, not too far away from West Indian House as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just below White Ave and 114th Street area. That's where she remembers her dad living or her family living when she was little.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so the professor, you know.
There were other stories there that would dovetail with yours. Yeah.
Yes. There was a. Marie Smallface was an Indian lady. Actually, she was my connection between getting this job in Ottawa as the research director for the National and Indian Brotherhood, because her boyfriend at the time would come to the faculty club parties. Neville Linton moved on from Edmonton, and I think he held a position at the University of the West Indies.
He died a couple of years ago.
Oh, okay. You see?
In England. He died in England.
He moved around.
Yeah.
So Marie Smallface, she later married a South African guy, but she was the one that kind of knew me from West Indian, from the International House, West Indian House, and the Steel Bands, and the Faculty Club because of Neville Linton. And that's how, when I showed up in Ottawa many years later as the researcher from Alberta, and they needed a research director for the National Indian Brotherhood, and those guys would last an average of 2 weeks on the job, and then the job is vacant again until I showed up, and then I kept it for a good 5-7 years or something like that. But you need to know that you know, after a while, West Indian House was, well, by the 70s, when even, well, okay, by the 80s, let me put it that way, then there was a much larger community of blacks that did not, that were not focused on West Indian House. And I would recommend having a chat, even though that youngster, he and I, he's married to my niece, but for whatever reason, and he's doing things, I don't think he knows that my history, because that was before his wife's time, right? So I don't know, I don't think he knows my involvement, because to some extent they're kind of a little bit distant. I don't go to
You're
Edmonton.
You're talking about Darren Jordan?
Darren Jordan, yeah.
Okay.
I don't go to Edmonton that often, but yeah, sometimes I go and I would, yeah.
Don't worry, I'll beat him on his bum for you.
Let him know that next time he's having an event, he's got to call the originator of West Indian House to give the presentation, because I think sometimes I get overlooked for that. And as a result, this.
By the way, the Coombs in my name, my grandfather is from St. Vincent.
Okay, I was going to ask you about that. Odd Coombs. I remember Odd Coombs. You know, do you remember?
I have family in St. Vincent.
Huh?
I have family in St. Vincent.
I'm asking you about Odd Coombs. He's the Coombs that I remember.
Yes, I know that name.
Oh, you know the name. Okay, well, I know the name too. I think he was senior to me. So he probably would have been a prefect before when I was just entering or something. He may even have taught there. I don't remember for sure. Fair skinned guy.
Yeah, we have some red family.
Yes. Yes, but later on I became the head prefect too. So
okay.
Yeah, but he would have been before. He probably went to grammar school with my brother, Asculon.
Okay.
Yeah, but yes, I know the name.
Yeah, that's just a distraction I'm creating. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah, but you're from the Coombs are from Montrose, right?
No. The Coombs, my Coombs last name is from St. Vincent. Montrose is my husband's last name.
Oh, okay.
That I'm renting.
Oh, that you're renting. Why are you rent? That's a story.
We've only been married for 42 years, but, you know, I still call it a rental, because who knows when they're ready to take it back.
Well,
I never gave up Coombs, because anytime the rental contract is up, I still have Coombs.
Oh, boy. But you know what you just did there? Because that name is Montrose, there is a place called Montrose, in, just on the outskirts of Kingstown. That's where the rich people live, at Montrose.
Okay.
Okay, and we lived at Rocky. Rocky is where the poor people live.
I see. Well, that had nothing to do with me, huh?
But when you're talking to a Vincentian, you say you're Donna Coombs Montrose, I say for sure, then that means she's from Montrose. That's
okay, all right.
So that's a person with lots of cash.
No, that means it's strong colonial heritage, because there's Montrose in Alberta here, there's Montrose in Trinidad.
Mm.
Yeah, so, well, you know, colonial ownership, wherever they go, they carry their name.
Mm-hmm.
And they put it on the dispossessed. You know,
right.
So you end up with Brown and Phillips and, you know, who knows where your original name was.
Yeah, but again, since you mentioned, since you're going there, and Denise needs to know this, the Fraser name that I have and that you have, it's not a slave name. My great-grandfather we got that name from my great-grandfather. And I have to go back. There were two, and they're in the history books that are written of St. Vincent. You would find Alexander Murdoch Fraser, or Murdoch Alexander Fraser, and Alexander Fraser.
I'm from Trinidad and Tobago. I have a master's degree in archives and library science and an undergraduate degree in history. I was passionate about telling stories about people on the margins. So I have interviewed people like C.L.R. James in Trinidad, where because I am a rebel by character. I was involved in the Black Power movement in Toronto. Yeah.
In Toronto?
Yeah.
Okay, so you know you know all about Sir George Williams University.
I was last in front of the sign mark Sir George Williams University in Montreal in last November.
Oh, but were you involved when the action was happening?
I was a student at Ryerson in Toronto. So we started. Well, we supported. We were not in Montreal. I was in Toronto.
Okay.
And those of us on the Ryerson and Guelph and U of T campuses, we supported the action in Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
We were located in Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we all students were impacted. So, I was involved in the Black Power movement. No, I didn't do A levels in Trinidad. I stopped at O levels and did a technical course in palantyping and then came to Toronto. Archives is graduate school. I finished my undergraduate. I did my undergraduate in Toronto. Yeah.
So I've written a story about West Indian House, which is on the eCamp site, on the city site.
Oh, okay. eCamp site, yeah.
It's Edmonton Museum as a community project. In fact, out of that, they've created a little postcard called West Indian Hub. And it, because I got the information I had about West Indian House was from interviewing Selwyn Jacob initially. And so I created a story out of the interview. And so the card describes, introduces Selwyn Jacob as a student resident of a West Indian House. I don't have a directory of all the students whoever lived in West Indian House. I don't even know if that exists in the University of Alberta archives, because the spot is currently called Tim Center for the Performing Arts. My position as historian laureate, mm-hmm. which I hold currently, and the research I'm doing, mm-hmm. is on the Black community here in Edmonton. And during this 2-year period, I have to focus on Edmonton. Yes, so that's why I try to include the University of Alberta and around, you know, Amber Valley or my own research area is that Selwyn, because I had done some stories on West Indian House,
mm-hmm.
extract because of the Gateway articles I extracted and so on.
Mm-hmm.
That's why Selwyn suggested that Denise talk to me.
Oh, okay.
But
well,
because my stories are lodged in the city on the eCamp site, because I've also done stories on the Cary West and community and oil workers from the Caribbean who have built the, you know, from the 60s, who have built the fortunes of Alberta and stories like that. So I am basically storytelling,
okay.
using research and archives to extract information on what we've done.
Well, yeah. You've got to tell the story of the Steak Caribbean Harmonites, but it's not so much West Indian House. You talk about West the Caribbean Harmonites because that is something significant, that we had a steel band, and there's some version of it. Don't forget, my knowledge of what's going on in Edmonton ended around 1978-79. But there are other guys who carried on the steel band. But the West Indian House is not a historical thing as such, the way I look at it anyway.
Well, I was asked about that.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I talked about it, because I was asked. And
right.
I'm saying that's not the only story I have done.
Mm-hmm.
Milton Zyfordine, in an interview I did with him, described all of the music bands that existed in the early 60s when
yes.
he came.
Yes, that's good.
And so there are records of the Caribbean Harmonites and
mm-hmm.
other groups that he was involved with.
Right.
You know,
well, Zyfordine was not involved with Caribbean Harmonites. He had the Indian guys had a different thing going on. And the Caribbean Harmonites was mainly the black guys.
Okay.
Because there was also a house. You had West Indian House was the black guys and the Nigerians and so on, and Rick and Neil and Carlisle Ross from Guyana and so on. That West Indian House housed the steel band Caribbean Harmonites, but
yes.
There was another house down the road with the East Indian guys, the Indian guys from Trinidad. Mainly Zyph Dean, but I don't think Zyph Dean lived there. But Rawlins Prasad, for example, and his brother Glenn Prasad. Glenn Prasad and I started a guitar band, like a little combo. And
yeah.
Right? And Andy Edwards was involved playing the mouth organ, but we'd do a little thing, but then that was before the real combo side with Greg Banfield those guys played the Ambassadors combo. That was like a respectable band. But again, those were mainly black guys.
So what was that house called and what was its address?
No name. It's just on 88th Avenue. There's no name to it. We had the name. And I gave the story about how it started earlier on. When I just came as a student with a scholarship, I spent the first year in Lister Hall, the student residence, and I knew nobody. But then by the end of the first year, I got to meet up with Roland Joseph, who played the steel band. And Roland had a steel band. He was not a student as such. I'm not even sure what the heck he did. But he had a first band, and he would play it. And, you know, and there was a Club International. So I moved the second year in Edmonton. I moved to Club International, not Club International. It was a house that was managed by Club International. So that house contained a couple of Kenyans, Martin Kiboy and so on. And, there's a Guyanese guy, and there's a native Indian guy, and there was me, and there was Elan Galper. I told you I phoned, and Elan Galper loaned me the money to get to eat. Right? But so that was International House, but I didn't like how they were the Club International who were responsible for this International House. I didn't like how they were kind of lording it over us. I mean, hey, I'm a big man. I'm a master of the grammar school. Who are you to tell me to clean the fridge or to clean the floor and stuff like that, right? Especially the white folks coming to tell us how to live. Mind you, in some cases, the place was nobody would take on the responsibility. So pretty soon, after spending a few months at Club International, at the house that was run by Club International, because Club International was like a place to welcome immigrants. Mary Dyer is the name that would come to my mind. And she was the white lady, the face of Club International, but she was the one who would come over and inspect the house and whatever. But we all paid our rent, a small amount in rent. And so when I moved from Lister Hall, very comfortable quarters where they would supply the meals and everything for the students, then I moved to Club International. Now you're responsible for your own meals. But then we came up with this idea of renting a house from the university. I don't know did you hear that story?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah.
So I'm getting your version.
Yeah, the university was, mine is the original version. So if you heard something else, then it's after what I'm telling you. So so it was me and maybe one or two others from Club International when we heard that the university was buying up the houses because they were expanding in the vicinity.
Yes.
And we got to rent one of those houses. And we called it West Indian House because it was mainly West Indians who were supposed to be there. The thing about West Indian House, we had our parties. And when we had our parties, that's when it was on the university grounds that West Indian House was located. And when we're having a house party, then everybody would know about it, would show up, including the Jamaicans and the, this, that, and the other. But mainly, not very many Africans. The Africans were like just students, and you didn't have a lot of them in the community living. Unlike the Caribbean, you had a couple, quite a few Caribbean people, like Leo Philip, for example, was from Trinidad. He did very well. He had his brother there as well. And the Barkers, they had a shop and hair. Yeah. And so then you had Mandy's Mandy's Caribbean Boutique. You didn't hear about that one?
Mandy or Nandy?
With an M. Mandy's Caribbean Boutique. They sold records at Mandy's Caribbean Boutique and fashion stuff like the Caribbean.
Who ran that?
A lady from Jamaica.
Okay.
Right? You never heard about that one?
No.
Okay. Well, I was also involved in getting some of the records and so on from Jamaica and from Trinidad, the Calypso records and the reggae records.
I see.
And Barbados.
Okay.
That was another business there, but that didn't do very well. It lasted about 3 or 4 years, and then it went kaput.
I was going to ask you, what year did you start West Indian House?
About 1960, well, my first year was 64, 65. So by the end of 65, so by the summer of 65, I was over at International House. And within a year, so about 66, 1966, West Indian House. But by that, after we had established, then the guys from Trinidad and of Indian race set up their own down the street, 88th Avenue or 87th Avenue. They had their house, but it was more like just a residence kind of thing. And most of those guys did not go to university. Some of them went, but a large percentage of them, unlike West Indian House, it was mainly guys who were going to university.
Was it also owned by the university?
It may have been. I don't. That's where they said he talked to Zaifdeen. Did he not? Well, he wasn't actually living there. It was Rollins.
I can ask him. That's okay.
Oh, is he still around, Zaifdeen?
Yeah. Well, yeah, he played mass after this year in Trinidad.
In Trinidad?
He carries on all his family.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But the guy, Zaifdeen, was like not living at that house. It was Glenn Prasad and his brother Rollins Prasad and a few other guys. I don't remember them because...
Yeah, that's okay.
But Zaifdeen had a kind of different business. I think they also had a business, or a relative of his had a business here in Vancouver, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with a restaurant and all that good stuff. But but that is later on. Let's not mix up the dates too much. This West Indian House was started in 1966, and then we moved maybe once or twice as West Indian House from one house to the other.
Okay.
And then once I got the run of things, again, the university ever so often, another house would come up, and you go and I went and I got to rent a second house. And now this time, that started my landlording. So I rented this house from the university, paid them, I don't remember, $50, $100 a month for just the empty house. And I put, seven desks, seven chairs. So each room had a desk and a chair, and then a stove and a fridge in the living area. And the Nigerians took over that house. They called it Nigeria House, but I was the landlord. So, I mean, I was quite a real estate investor. I started when I still had the West Indian House. We rented as students the West Indian House, and we did a real nice deal. We paid $30 a month to eat and for the rent. So that one was not for profit. That me and my buddies lived in that one. The year I got mine, it was like seven of us got scholarships. I was the only one that went to Alberta. One PR went to Saskatchewan. Carl Glasgow had one as well. And yeah, a lot of Winty Roberts went to New Brunswick, Mount Allison, and so on. But we were going to talk about this Sir George William thing. All of that was not bad news, you know, because those people who came out, some of them, Rosie Douglas, for example, became the premier of the prime minister of Dominica.
He served 2 years,
Yeah.
He served 2 years in prison.
Oh. Yeah, yeah, there you go. Uh-oh. And then another one became a senator. You probably. And Coles became a senator. So, you know, and those people didn't, you know, it. Don't forget, if you know the history, the fight, the struggle to be freed from colonial domination in the Caribbean, people like I talked about Ebenezer Theodore Joshua, he was a trade union leader, and he also spent time in jail, right, because mm-hmm. of their fight. And you know, when you read the history, it was quite common. If they weren't being killed, they would spend time in jail. West Indian House, did I explain? I don't know, because I said it earlier on today.
Yes. And you were saying that you weren't allowed to the Nigerian parties when they had their Nigerian do at their spot.
Yes. I was just there to collect the rent.
Right.
I was just there to collect the rent, and I had to be out of there.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. Mind you, we had two Nigerians living in West Indian House just up the street.
Oh.
Right?
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. So, but that was my beginning of being a landlord. So I would deck out that house, and I'd charge them, I don't remember, $100 each person, but by time seven, and I would pay the university $50 or $100. But I invested the cost of the fridge and the stove and the washer and dryer and the seven desks and seven chairs and a TV somewhere.
Oh.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but that gave me a nice pocket change. But then later on, I bought and rented. I was a landlord. I was learning the business of landlording, and that's what I wanted my kids to understand. That Leo Philip, again from Trinidad, we and he hooked up afterwards in Vancouver, after being separated. I didn't know what had happened to him. I went to Ottawa, and he went. I don't remember where he went. But then all of a sudden, 15 years or so later, we ended up at a Trinidad Association meeting, the beginning of the Trinidad Association in Vancouver. And the only person I knew in the room was Leo Philip. Later on, he said he was in California. He owned a motel down there. And his advice to me is, don't make them know, all right, who owns that business. You know, you it's not yours. Don't make them know. That's because of discrimination. So when I implemented Leo Philip's idea, don't make them know, then I used to have as many as, 10, 15 doors in rental units, you know. One I had 15 in Nanaimo, 15 apartments.
This concludes our documentary, West Indian House 1970. I'm your host, Denise Fraser. The story continues with a younger generation, and our culture has expanded. I am proud to recognize the profound impact my father, Alfred Fraser, has had on the West Indian community in Edmonton. In the early days, he organized a steel pan band that created a sense of home for his friends and helped keep our culture alive and thriving. I want to acknowledge the sources of my references. My father, Alfred Fraser, always shared stories from his time at the University of Alberta, frequently mentioning many names whose significance I didn't understand at the time. Now I fully appreciate that this network of individuals laid the foundation for the West Indian House in the mid-1960s. I extend special thanks to Pat Dillon, D. Don, from Pioneer Grooves, who connected me with Selwyn Jacob, and to Selwyn Jacob, the filmmaker and director, for introducing me to Donna Coombs Montrose, the City of Edmonton's historian laureate. She then introduced me to Andrew Patrick Edwards, an author who has lived in Edmonton for over 50 years and remains involved in the Caribbean culture at the age of 89. My musical references include A Yellow Bird Steel Pan Medley, Trinidad All-Stars' Curry Tabanka, Ray Holman's What the World Needs Now, Steel Pan Band Rendition. A special mention goes to the Edmonton Klondike Days Parade 1972 YouTube video with 4,000 views. It's an 8-minute and 38-second video posted by Sintel Audio Visual 13 years ago, which I found online, and at 7 minutes and 49 seconds, the West Indian House comes down the street with a full procession with the band and all, including my father, Alfred Fraser, which sparked this entire podcast. Go check it out on YouTube. You'll be entertained. As we said many times in the podcast, the audio is not included, but you can see my dad playing steel pan on the streets of Edmonton in 1972. Thank you to the Community Radio Fund of Canada, without whose support and funding this program would not be possible. Thank you for listening to West Indian House 1970. I must acknowledge CITR Radio and Discorder.
Thank you for listening to this podcast episode brought to you by CITR 101.9 FM's podcast incubation program, Power and Voice. This initiative was made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and we'd like to thank them for their support in bringing these voices to your headphones or earbuds or car speakers, however you are consuming today's episode. Thanks for listening, and thank you to the Community Radio Fund of Canada.